Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you hear that theme song and you are longtime listeners of this program, you know that means one thing. It is race week in Indianapolis. We look forward to the 109th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race coming up on Sunday, and we've got a lot to get to tonight.
I thought that was Jazzercise music. I didn't know what was happening.
Tuna is a little too young to remember the classic introductions on ABC of the Delta Force theme at the Indianapolis 500, with the great Paul Page providing narration. So we got a lot. There's tons of storylines that I want to get to relative to the Indianapolis 500.
Great to be here, guys.
It is tremendous to be back. By the way, this is the Blockout Sports Pod. We are back on the air.
Man. Thank God. I didn't know where I was
for a second. Forgot what you guys look like.
I am behind the master control desk. Another nod to the Indianapolis 500. That's where that comes from. I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. Over my right shoulder at the high top table is the big fella, the Tuna Country Matt Kempf. And bellied up to the bar is apparently the new mayor of the city of Indianapolis, Indiana.
Woo!
Mr. Freddie M. Benders is in the house.
Let's
the fabulous
go,
one.
Baby.
Fred looks resplendent in his Pacers sweatshirt, his Indianapolis Motor Speedway cap, and his tremendous bling of a gold IndyCar.
Let's
and my,
hold on.
And my stopwatch from 1983 that still has a shoelace around it to go around your neck that my dad and I have had for years from the time trials. This was my best friend at the track.
That's awesome.
At the racetrack.
I don't want to run past what do you call the, is it a charm? What is it that hangs from a necklace?
Yeah, it's a charm, I guess.
I feel like there's a better name for it. But that is not a charm. That's a keychain hooked onto
his
necklace.
It's a gold keychain.
Yes, well, gold.
All gold. Yeah. Solid gold.
Solid 20.
Of course.
And I threw it on my bling, yes, and I will be wearing it at the Indy 500 on Sunday. I can't wait to hear some people say, I like your bling, dude.
Oh, yeah. And I guarantee people will react and respond accordingly.
Sato.
You going to wear headphones?
I have earplugs.
Okay.
I have my earplugs
you gotta get
packed,
the
ready.
Big ones.
Actually, Tuna, I have a scanner that I use at the race.
That's not going to protect your ears.
And I use those headphones.
Ah, okay.
And
so you're telling me earplugs won't work for me. I need...
No, the earplugs are fine.
Okay.
Earplugs are fine. That's what I wore before I started listening to the scanner. So, we are going to get into the Indianapolis 500 tonight. Is also game one of the NBA Eastern Conference Finals. Classic matchup from days gone by, the Pacers and the New York Knickerbockers. Game one gets underway here in about an hour, a little more than that, from the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden. We've got some college football news that we want to get to. The Preakness Stakes was this past Saturday. Want to briefly touch on that, and then we'll just see where the rest of the show takes us. Want to remind everybody we are on social media. This week will be an extra push out social media wise because I know a lot of people, much like the Kentucky Derby, like to listen to this, especially our listeners in Indiana, like to listen to the episode the week before the race. So we will be pushing out on that. If you are one of those people and you know somebody who enjoys the Indianapolis 500 or maybe is even tangentially interested in the 500, let them know about this podcast. I think we've got some good information for you this evening and a breakdown of the race a little bit, but more I want to get to the storylines that have really taken over center stage relative to the 500 here in the last couple of days.
Do you, like, just read a thesaurus every morning? Or, I don't think I've ever heard those words or that word put together in my life.
Tangentially.
Either one. Neither.
That's a gentle tangerine.
That's kind of what I thought, but I wasn't sure. I was going to be the dumbass that asked the question.
It would be like me saying sort of interested, if they're sort of interested.
Okay.
Jim Nance has used that term before.
He does not have a thesaurus. He just watches Jim Nance clips over and over. Now I get it. That makes complete sense.
I always try to figure out one word per episode that'll make Tuna react just the way he did.
Dude, sometimes you get like 7 or 8. I'm just too like nervous to bring it up. But like, I'm not going to be the only dumbass that doesn't know what that means.
Both of you all are very well read. I will say that. Me, Freddie, not. No. No. I'm a slanger.
I don't think anybody would ever realize that, Fred, if they've listened to this program for more than maybe 20 minutes.
He's a slanger.
But I did want to get the episode started this evening with discussion of the Indianapolis 500, which, as I said again, takes place this Sunday. Green flag will drop. Typically, it's around 12:30 in the afternoon or something like that. I was at the Speedway this past weekend, and for Fast Friday, and then the 2 days of qualification, Saturday and Sunday. Was tremendous, as always. Visited the new IMS Museum, which, if you have been there in the past, you probably enjoyed the way that it was before. But when I say that it may be one of the greatest improvements of a place like that that I've ever seen, I don't think I am being superfluous in my...
Oh.
Yeah, see, I did that. I did that just...
I know what that one is.
I did that just for Tuna. No, I would not be overstating the improvements that they have made and how cool it is and how much more interactive it is and a lot more stuff for kids and the real racing simulators that the tubs move and the wraparound video screens and the movie. For those of you who have been to the Kentucky Derby Museum... They have a movie now that is very similar to the one they do at the Derby Museum. So that was incredible.
The one with Sylvester Stallone in it?
No.
Oh.
No, it is not that movie.
Okay.
That, most IndyCar fans do not recognize the existence of that film.
No, I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know.
this one's, I think, called like The Front Row or something like that. It's very cool. But... As we were at the Speedway this weekend and Saturday, so a quick breakdown, and I understand a lot of you that are listening probably already know this stuff, but I know we have a lot of listeners that don't necessarily know much respectfully about auto racing in general and specifically the 500, but the way they do qualifications is they set the field 12 through 29, I'm sorry. The fast 12 get separated, and the final four get separated. And then on Sunday, those cars come back, and the fast 12 are now running. You're locked into starting in the top 12, but then you qualify again, and that is they pare that down to the final six, and then those six run for the pole. So if you make the last six, you're guaranteed to start in the first two rows. And then they take the last four cars, the slowest four cars from Saturday, and only three of those make the field. So one car is not going to make the race. Unfortunately, this year, that was Louisville's own Jacob Abel.
So he lost on bump day.
Yes.
To VK.
Yes, who is his teammate.
And VK is a great driver.
He is. They both race for Dale Coyne Racing. They were struggling all weekend with a power issue, really. It was not anything the drivers did. They just the cars weren't fast enough.
So the Miller High Life car is still being ridden by VK?
No, the Miller
Able. Okay.
The Miller High Life car did not make the field.
Oh, well, I got to take that hat out of my duffel bag.
It did not make the field, unfortunately. But what happened?
I think you cursed him, dude.
I had that hat to go.
Did you get
baby.
It right before the race?
I've already had a Miller High Life hat, and Travis said the merch looked legit.
Well, no. Here's the thing.
Oh,
they didn't have merch, but I went to his garage, and one of his crew was sitting outside of his garage, and he was wearing a great Miller American Racing hat.
Wow.
And I said, hey, do you know if they're selling these hats anywhere? And he said, you can have this one for $100. Thankfully, I did not have $100 cash in my wallet, or I might have been tempted.
Did you attempt to bargain with him?
No, I laughed. I'm
like, I got 40, dude.
I laughed and said, maybe I'll be back.
You got Venmo, big boy?
He said, good luck in the race.
But the Able Racing team did not make the race. This year, Jacob Able comes across. Of course, we all root for him, being from Louisville. And
he's been in my garage bar.
Well, his parents have been in your garage bar.
Right.
But he will hope, and he's really comes across as a class act.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's going to be
great people.
He's going to be in Renus VK's pit box for the race. And as he said, he's a rookie. He just wants to soak up as much as he can and learn. And they will certainly be back next year. But the big story,
there's a lot.
The big story should have been, or the big stories should have been, that Joseph Newgarden is going for his third straight Indy 500 race win, which has never been done. Elio Castroneves is going for his fifth overall 500-mile race win, which has never been accomplished.
Rookie.
A rookie, Robert Schwartzman, mm-hmm. won the pole position.
Bam.
The first rookie to win the pole since Teo Fabi in 1983.
Oh, I didn't want you to say the name. I saw 1983. I was at that Indy 500, and I was going to guess who it was, and my guess was going to be Teo Fabi, the skull green and white car number 33. That was my guess. That's how good that my memory is. Well, and I think he was number 33, not Harry Gant.
No.
But he was number 33 in the skull car in NASCAR. But Teo Fabi, if I remember right, was the 33 car in the skull bandit or whatever car.
Skull bandit special.
In the 1983. And Tom Sneva, if I'm not mistaken, won that Indy 500.
He certainly did.
Boom! I'm getting ready for this race, boys. Travis has no idea the homework I've done.
He certainly did. Do you remember what car Tom Sneva was driving in
1983? This was a red, Kodiak. White, and blue car. It was a red, white, and blue car, kind of. It seemed like to me that it was red, white, and blue. The Texaco Special.
The Texaco Star Special.
Boom, baby. I am telling you, it's all coming back to me.
Freddie's on fire.
He's got a wrinkly brain tonight. I like it.
So Robert Schwartzman wins the pole, not only in his first attempt at the Indianapolis 500, this is his first time ever racing on an oval. And he won, and for a brand new racing team, Prima Racing.
Okay.
Brand new team, first time on an oval, first driver ever born in Israel.
Wow.
To win the, I believe, not just to qualify to win the pole. I believe he's the first Israeli-born driver to qualify for the Indianapolis 500. And also, those are just all great storylines.
Jesus would have won if it was going on back then. So, just throwing that out there.
Who would he have raced for? You know, there was a guy named...
Well, he would have had a great...
the man upstairs.
He would have had a great pit team.
Yeah. 12 apostles out there just ripping those tires off.
I will tell you this.
Could get stabbed in the back by his teammate,
one
though.
Of them, though.
His...
Yeah.
His
one of them shady.
His, I would say his de facto, like, representative driver is your favorite driver, Stingray Rob.
Stingray Rob, baby.
Big Stingray Rob podcast down here.
I'm going to find me a Stingray hat when I'm down
here. He has a...
Get a big Stingray shirt.
No, the big thing going off the back.
Like a cheese head, but a Stingray?
Yeah, yeah.
He has a big, shall we say, spiritual presence on his car, like graphics-wise, delivery and stuff.
There you go.
But so those are all great stories. But then before they were racing for the Fast 12, Team Penske, for those of you who don't follow the sport closely, Roger Penske is the winningest owner in the history of the 500.
I think even Clayton knows who Penske
right.
is. I mean,
a titan of American business.
Good
you know,
Lord.
You've probably seen the Penske auto shops or the Penske car dealerships. He's got a NASCAR team, sports car team, IndyCar team. I mean, he is ubiquitous in motorsports, shall we say. He's got it, and just a legend of the sport. Well, he happens to not only have the most successful IndyCar team of all time, he also owns the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and he owns the IndyCar series.
Dude, like, come
so
on.
So he has a team.
And he owns Pennzoil. No,
so he has a team, he owns the track, and he owns the series, okay? Mm-hmm. So three of his cars have qualified for the final 12. Scott McLaughlin, who's driving the classic yellow Pennzoil machine that
you've seen
Rick Mears, Elio, Johnny Rutherford made it famous probably first. They called it the yellow submarine back then.
Yes.
He had an incident on Saturday morning going into turn two and basically destroyed the race car. So he was out of the Fast 12. Joseph Newgarden, as we mentioned before, the two-time defending champion, and Will Power, one of the legends of...
Names.
And of IndyCar racing.
Kind of like Dick Trickle.
Dick Trickle's way better than Will Power.
No, he's not.
No.
Well, name-wise.
No.
Dick Trickle has never been as good at anything in his life as Will Power is at driving.
Well, we got updates every night that Dick Trickle finished 42nd. Or wherever he finished, they made sure to tell us.
But... So, those two cars are in what they call tech inspection, where they make sure that all the cars are legal to be ran. You know, the wings are the right height, the car's within weight, so on and so forth. They come over the PA and say that Newgarden and Powers cars have been pulled out of tech inspection. Ooh, you know, you hear the crowd, ooh. A few minutes later, they said those cars have been disqualified and are not allowed to run in the 12 car Fast 12 shootout. Nobody knows at that time exactly what's going on, especially if you were at the track. The long and short of it is there is a piece on the back of these cars that's attached to the bottom on the gearbox called an attenuator. And it's a safety piece. It's a big carbon fiber piece that the rear wing is attached to. It is there to, if a car goes into the wall backwards, it's there to absorb energy. It's a safety measure. And it is one of the pieces on the car that's a spec piece, which means all of them are supposed to be exactly the same. There are a few different in the rule books, and you would have to be a real... auto racing nerd to know these specifically. I don't. That you are allowed to tweak to a certain extent, but the attenuator is not one of those. It was found that Joseph Newgarden and Will Power had illegally, not they hadn't, their team, Team Penske, had illegally modified this attenuator, essentially filling in some gaps, for lack of a better term, that exist on this particular piece of equipment, so that made it smooth instead of ridged. The Penske team and what has come out, they claim that it was done because the team did not like the way it looked for aesthetic reasons. Other people have opined that a smoother surface would create less drag, perhaps make the car faster. Perhaps the wing sits differently on the smooth out attenuator, causing, you know, the wing to be more effective. Anyway, they were found to have been illegally modified, which brought some people. One of the unique things about the IMS Museum is that the winning car from last year is prominently on display at the museum. And Marshall Pruitt from Racer Magazine went into the museum and found that Newgarden's car from last year, the winning car, was also illegally modified, which begs the question, how long had Penske been doing this, and how did they get away with it for so long? Now, obviously, there's going to be some conflict of interest type of questions being asked. It would essentially be like if Jerry Jones owned the NFL and all the people that were in charge of the officiating and everything were employees of Jerry Jones. Well, I would think there would be a natural inclination of people to think that perhaps the league was skewed towards Jerry Jones. Well, those are now the questions being asked about Penske and Penske Racing.
So they're digging all into it.
Yeah. So it breaks this afternoon that Roger finally makes a statement and says, the integrity of our sport is the most important thing to me, blah, blah, blah. And they fired Tim Cindric, who has been the president of Penske Racing Team for close to, I think, 20 years. They fired the chief strategist for Scott McLaughlin for some reason.
You're saying Penske fired him.
Yes, and they fired their director of IndyCar operations today on the Wednesday before the 500. I mean, imagine if, like, Clemson and Texas are playing the national championship game, and you find out Thursday and the game's on Saturday that Sarkisian and Dabo Swinney have been fired.
Right, or you're getting ready to play Clemson's national championship and you fire your offensive coordinator, Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, but
but these, no, that's even worse than
these
that.
These are the guys that call the races. I mean, they're like the head coach on race day, right?
That's crazy.
And so it's a real...
But Penske has to know that he has a backup plan, right? If he's going to do that, or...
Well, I mean, I'm sure there are people in his organization that can move in there, but it's not an ideal situation. I mean, to have your first time calling, being the chief strategist at the Indianapolis 500, where strategy sometimes is the reason that a team wins or loses. It's just... it's really, and it's going to lead, I've already seen on Racer Magazine this afternoon that they are already in talks of having a third-party governing body come in to, like, right, oversee the officiating. It's really just a, I know it's a niche sport or whatever, but in the world of auto racing, it really is a kind of an earth-shattering.
So any other time, they would have plenty of time to look at this, but it's like right before the biggest race of the year.
Well, yeah.
And they're like...
And like Doug... So really what was going to happen is they were going to move Power and Newgarden to 11th and 12th. And then...
Then they moved them to the very end.
Doug Bowles, who's the president of the Speedway and the president of the series... Who, he's only been on the job 2 months. Welcome to your new gig, Doug.
Right. Good luck.
He decided overnight that at the biggest race in the world, you need to make a hard stand as far as cheating or however you want to say it, breaking of the rules that blatantly will not be tolerated. So now Joseph Newgarden and Will Power are starting 32nd and 33rd. No driver has ever won from further back in the field than 28th. And
Penske's clear, right? He oversees so much that it's there's no way he could have.
Here's the thing, and I'd be curious what you guys think, because
an outsider, I'm going, oh, Penske got busted. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
As someone that doesn't know.
I know for a fact that when Penske took over the track in the series, he said, I'm going to take a step back from being the super hands-on guy. He's got enough fish to fry.
A million.
But his whole thing, it's like they make shirts, Penske Perfect. Like, he's such an attention to detail guy.
Okay.
But he trusted his guys, I think, that they would carry on the tradition of doing everything above board. But see, the other big piece of this is this same racing team got caught at St. Petersburg last year. There's a little button on your steering wheel called push to pass. When you push it, each team has X amount of seconds depending on the race. You push it, it gives your car extra horsepower so you can make a move.
Right.
Well, at St. Petersburg, the cars were not even supposed to have the button on the steering wheel, but if they did have the button on the steering wheel, the push to pass was supposed to be disabled. Nobody was to use it. Well, Joseph Newgarden in particular, his car had that button and it worked, and they found out that he used it.
Oh.
So that just happened in the 24 season, and so they had fought their way to kind of clear their name from this scandal, and then this happened. So Penske really had no choice from an optics standpoint but to make major organizational changes, and they did. And that is now the story that is dominating Indianapolis rather than
And you got two studs coming from the very back that's never done it before.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it possibly could be the greatest back row in the history of the 500.
Right.
With Newgarden, Will Power, and Rinus VK, who's almost won the race or
been
a major.
Exactly. He's
been major,
up in the front a
he's
bunch.
Been a major factor when he ran for Ed Carpenter. You also have your guy, Takuma Sato, two-time Indy 500 winner, at 48 years old, starting in the middle of the front row, which, to a certain
That's
extent...
Takuma.
You call him Taku.
Taku.
To a certain extent, it worries me a little bit, because Sato is a notoriously aggressive driver. Thing that he has on his hat says no attack, no chance. And there have been cases of drivers leading the field at Indianapolis coming into the first turn and getting a little spooked. And I know Taku is a veteran. He probably won't do it, but I worry about Schwartzman getting overwhelmed
rookie,
by the moment
right.
and backing off the throttle or moving out of his line. And Sato going, I'm going to lead into the first turn. And, you know, there's always that. I mean, you'll see it on Sunday, Fred, when the green flag drops, I'm a nervous wreck to get through that first turn.
Right, because they're all, they're just everywhere.
And so, you know, that's just another intriguing part of it. You have Ed Carpenter, who I think has a pretty decent car starting around 13th now, I believe. He's from Indianapolis. He's one of my favorite drivers. You have all these great storylines as pertaining to the actual race, but the dominant talk around the Speedway right now is, of course, what's going on with the Penske team.
And Rossi hasn't won yet, right?
Rossi
had a couple Andretti situations.
Rossi won in 2016.
Oh, he did win. Okay, so he won.
He won the 100th running as a rookie. He was a rookie. And he didn't really understand what he had accomplished at the time, and I believe he'd be the first to tell you that he didn't realize what a big deal it was to win, you know, to win the Indianapolis 500, and he would love to win it again now that he, right. you know, he's a series regular. Right. He's a tremendous driver.
And he's been through all kinds. He's been through a couple seconds and thirds where he got beat at the end, right? Well,
And he's usually very good there. Last year he struggled a bit. If I remember, was he last year or the year before? He's running for Ed Carpenter Racing, so he's a teammate along with Christian Rasmussen. Those are just, you know, I wanted to give everybody just the quick kind of overview on what's going on in the race. I'm gonna and Tuna, you may not.
We gotta pick our guys.
Guys are speaking Chinese to me. I don't know what's happening.
You're probably not super.
But you know who Stingray Rob is.
Familiar with all the drivers and everything.
By saying not super familiar means I know three.
Okay.
That's that.
So is it safe to say that you are sticking with your man Stingray Rob to win the 500?
Yeah, because it's between him and two other drivers. So
who's the other? Castillo,
Robert Newgarden, and
Joseph.
It's what I said. And Tyco.
Taco.
Pat O'Ward.
O'Ward. I love Pat O'Ward.
Yeah, he's
a good driver too.
Out of process of elimination between the three, I'm gonna stick with Stingray.
I'm with you.
So
and he has the Lord on his side.
Yeah, that's a big factor. I mean, when you're handicapping, you always look for the team with the
and
Lord.
Why
on
does
his
he
side.
Have the Lord on his side?
Except for Liberty, I guess.
Is he okay? Religious guy.
See, I would think Stingray Rob is some psycho that drinks.
No, Stingray's
oil
a big Bible name.
Gasoline alley.
There's a lot of. It was definitely mixed
in the
Bible.
Stingrays in
the
Bible.
There is a lot of Stingray the Apostle, Stingray the Archbishop.
I just would think Stingray Rob's sitting outside of his Winnebago.
We could have a Pope Stingray one.
You know,
day.
Like
of
the,
course.
The night before the race, and he's partying with his boys. When Stingray, what? Where, you know, I picture him being totally different.
Salt Walther, he ain't.
Salt Walther, that's right. And I know
that sounds
know
like a bourbon
about
to me.
Salt
Walther. Salt
Walther. See, I knew him as. From my dad and them telling me creepy stories of the Indy 500 on the way there and stuff. Salt Walter is who I thought his name was. That his nickname was Salt.
His name is Salt Walther.
But Salt Walther.
Oh, I thought y'all were saying Salt.
Salt Walther.
Salt okay. Walther. He, real name or just nickname?
I believe Salt is his nickname.
Okay.
But he didn't die. He hit someone, right?
No, we can. I can tell you that story off the air. That was the 1973.
Right.
You're conflating a few things that happened
okay,
in that
I
race.
Gotcha, I
got you. I'll tell that story.
Yeah, we'll get into it
off later. The air later. Fred, I know that you like Sato to win. You have any other drivers?
Herta's always been my favorite.
Yeah,
The kid or whatever, he's no longer young, I guess. And
Colton Herta, you're talking
Colton
about.
Colton Herta, I've always been a fan of him. I was pulling for him in Nashville the last time we all went.
He had a pretty major crash on Saturday and had to qualify his backup car. So he's starting pretty far back in the field, but he is a very good driver.
But I am a Sato fan for sure. I love the way he, and I just know that he's always up in the front, and I, now that you've said that he is kind of a kamikaze driver, I've noticed that he is a kamikaze driver, and that's one reason why I have it.
And
I kind of like Rossi.
And I want to be clear that he's not like a dangerous driver.
No,
he's just a ultra-aggressive driver. Like, one year, he had a chance before he won the race to win on the last lap, and in turn four, he literally drove into the grass to try to pass. And, of course, that won't work at 230 miles an hour,
right,
and he immediately went straight into the wall. But that's his mentality.
I saw a great move on the time trials, or maybe it wasn't the time trials. Maybe it was just when they were all out practicing.
Yes.
Who was the race car driver that could have screwed his whole car up and did a 360 and grabbed control of it? Do you remember? I'm trying to think of who that was. I thought he did a hell of a job. And from the announcers, they were like, that could have been heartbreak for him all week.
Yeah.
This was early on. I can't think of who it was. And, of course, they were like, oh, you know, that reminds us of the anniversary of Danny Sullivan and all that. And I wish I could have remembered his name.
Well, that happened to Christian Rasmussen yesterday.
Oh, okay. So I figured it happens a lot. But he did a pretty nifty maneuver not to hit anyone. And the guys around him were also smart. They did not panic in any way either, but I thought he made a great move to save his car and other cars. You know, I guess they have, I don't know all the lingo, but I know they have a backup car, I'm sure. But then I'm assuming if you total your main car, you are behind the eight ball.
Yeah. So if your main car is totaled, you go to your backup car, which they have to basically build, and a lot of them have. So there's two different types of cars. You have your speedway car and your street and road course car. A lot of the backup cars they have are street and road course setups. They have to take all that stuff off, put on all the super speedway stuff. It takes a long time. Typically, Colton Herta's team did a great job to get him out, but his car didn't have everything that everybody else did.
Right.
But they got a car out and qualified it, which was the most important thing. So, Herta, Sato, you have anybody else?
Well, besides Award, I like Award. And, of course, I like all the hometown guys, which, you know, I'm Carpenter, like you say. There's a couple other ones, I think. You know, I always have liked the name Willpower. I think that guy's
Connor Daly,
yeah. Derek Daly's son, right?
Yes.
Remember,
yes.
Derek? I was at an Indy 500 with Derek Daly. Had the coolest looking car. Has he passed away in a car wreck? Correct.
No, he is still with us.
Okay,
I just heard him on the radio.
But all those other guys. But I'm a Sato guy and Herta, and then I like Rossi and Award, and then of course I pull for all the local guys that you all like too. So now Tuna's favorite car is the pace car.
What is it?
I don't know.
Is that another Corvette?
Yeah, it's
the Corvette, baby.
Is it a Stingray Corvette?
That's funny. I saw the pace car up there at the speedway. It's a 2025 Corvette ZR1.
Wow.
And I remarked to my friend Alan, who's been on the program before, I said I would still prefer like a 77 Stingray.
Yeah.
They're like,
I mean, I've never been able to fit in any Corvette.
Well,
so like, I just like to admire them from a distance all years.
That was the other thing I said. I said, I'm not sure I could get in and out of that car with my back. Like, if they got me in there, I might not get out.
It's funny for a car that's made for middle-aged men. There's no way to look cool after you're over 40 getting in and out of that thing.
You're right.
It's funny, back in the day, I used to, after I'd go the time trials and then I would go back to the race, it was just the car. The beauty and the color of the car is who I pulled for.
Yep.
You know, I was always, I liked Richard Petty, so I always pulled for Gordon Johncock because he had the STP.
Wildcat special.
Yeah. So, and obviously, my dad was an AJ Foyt, Mario Andretti guy.
Which
always
I
pulled. Then I was a little Al guy, of course, and you know,
I saw Mario back in Gasoline Alley on Sunday. I caught a glimpse of Rick Mears in the Penske pit, behind a little sliver in the door, because Penske clearly had some discussions going on in their garage.
Right.
But that's a cool thing about going up there. If you get to go to Gasoline Alley, is not only do you see the current drivers, but last year I got to see said hello to Johnny Rutherford. And
right. Was Little Al's rookie year, was that 85 when Danny Sullivan did the 360?
It would have been right about that time.
I think that was the last Indy 500 I went to was the 360.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been right about
when,
that
when
time.
I in the Domino's car.
Yep. I.
Ooh,
yep.
Pizza pizza.
Yep, you're right.
No, it's not pizza. It's
they called
Caesar's.
It.
The no, the
it was a cool
they
drawing.
Called it like the Domino's fast delivery special or the fast delivery yeah. special
had the yeah. the Noid on it.
I believe this was I believe this was pre Noid. Okay. I think it was pre Noid.
That's when Domino's took
it
off.
It was red and blue like
yeah. It had the Domino's pizza box thing logo on the front. Oh, yeah.
Remember they had the 30 minutes or less and they had to quit doing it because all their drivers were getting in wrecks trying to make it on time.
Yeah, they yeah. There's a I'm not going to get into it here, but there's a horrible story about the one that actually made them quit.
Yeah, yeah.
I do not mean to laugh because it's not funny, but it is kind of funny that it happened multiples of times. So they finally had to basically say, we'll try to get there as fast as we can. I'm going to, my heart really wants Ed Carpenter to finally win a 500. I would not be opposed if Alexander Rossi won his second. I'm obviously a 500 history guy, so I got to see Elio win his fourth. For someone to win a fifth would be...
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
Would be
who doesn't love that guy?
Unbelievable. And I don't have... I mean... Ed Carpenter is my de facto favorite driver, but I don't really have like drivers that I don't like or
the main thing is you want everyone to finish safely.
Yeah, I want everybody to be safely. Safe. I want it to be a safe race, a great race, which it almost always is. And, that the best car will win. And we will be back here on, next week to recap, hopefully a thrilling, safe, Indianapolis 500, and I thank you, Tuna, for...
We lost Freddy somewhere in the snake pit.
fortunately, Fred, now these days you have to have a ticket.
Credential.
You have
oh,
to have a
okay.
ticket, and the snake pit is an organized thing, and it's a...
Oh, man.
It's
I can't just roll in with the Hell's Angels?
They don't do that anymore.
They take the fun out of everything, don't they?
I know. I'll
tell you what, it's a giant... like rave techno party.
Oh, wow.
And it's all a bunch of frat boys and stuff like
man.
That.
Okay.
They should change
good,
the name.
Because the last
it's
time
not
I
a snake
went there,
anymore.
No.
The Outlaws were lined up.
Oh,
and
yeah.
my dad and Tater took me down there. And Lurch was down there with a, I don't know what you call it, one of those crazy helmets with the point coming up out of it. He was about 7'6", and he was harassing guys.
Like D-Day war on
and
Animal
they,
House?
There was an old Buick sedan sitting there, and people were beating it with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
I mean, it was literally beat down, and it started getting a little rowdy, and my dad and them were getting a little nervous. They're like, all right, we're out of here.
Yeah,
and that was the snake pit for me.
Yep. It's not like that anymore. I do want to. I know Tuna. That's not your thing. And you.
No, you guys
you
go ahead. Go
no,
on,
no
man.
Idea
like
what we're
you
talking
guys,
about.
Yeah.
But we have. I hate to completely switch gears to a incredibly somber topic here. But we. I mean, it just came over the wire. Breaking news that another thing happening to make Indianapolis the center of the sports world. Colts owner Jim Irsay has passed away.
Jesus.
Wow.
That just came across the wire.
Damn.
Obviously.
That guy's a legend in his own. I mean, good Lord.
Obviously, no information details. All it said was that he passed away peacefully in his sleep this afternoon. Jimmy Irsay has had well-documented issues over the years, and he's been very forthright in discussing those and trying to help people with mental health, with substance abuse issues. Jim Irsay, and I know it was funny as he has that personality, and you know, he's kind of a has kind of a hippie mentality almost with his guitar collection and being a Grateful Dead head and having the original manuscript to On the Road by Jack Kerouac and all those things. But with all that other stuff, and, you know, the Colts came to Indiana in, what, 1984? I believe it was 1984. There hasn't been anybody probably that's meant more to the city of Indianapolis since 1984 than Jim Irsay.
Well, by far.
He kept the team there after his father passed away. And they were awful. There were many lean years. He was the GM for several years.
And got criticized a lot as the GM.
He gave up that, and they became successful. First with Vince Tobin and, gosh, the Captain Comeback Colts teams with Harbaugh. Mora? No, the coach was Ted Marchibroda.
But I'm trying
to think about who the GM and everything was. Anyway, his importance to the city of Indianapolis cannot be overstated. That really, for fans of the Colts, fans of the NFL, and especially those people living in Indianapolis. I'm sure there will be a lot of tributes pouring in and things. Like I said, we're reacting to this in real time. I just saw it come across my phone.
Crazy.
So all of our best wishes to the family and friends of Jim Irsay and fans of the Colts and of the NFL and any and really anybody outside of football who has been touched or influenced by Jim Irsay in any way. There's really no good way to segue out of that, but we will keep the Indianapolis-centric tone of this show going. Game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. Pacers-Knicks tonight. Game one at Madison Square Garden. Pacers open as, and I'm not sure if the line is still there. They were a 4.5-point underdog, which is less than any point spread, I believe, in any of the five games against the Cavaliers. They were underdogs of more than 4.5, I believe, in all five of those games. You know, people that are my age that were Pacers fans, that was our rivalry through the 90s. You had the early 90s, when Reggie was very young and Detlef Schrempf and Chuck Person were more the focal points of those teams. The Pacers were making the playoffs for the first time. The first round series were only five games, and they had a couple of good matchups then. The Pacers never beat them. Then the second wave, when the team is built around Reggie, Rick Smits, Dale Davis, Antonio Davis, Larry Brown is the coach. Haywood Workman is the point guard. The Spike Lee, Reggie Miller rivalry. Then Mark Jackson comes in. The Pacers finally beat the Knicks to make the Eastern Conference Finals. Then there's a third iteration with Larry Johnson, Allen Houston,
Grandmama,
Charlie Ward, Sprewell. The Pacers beat them in the Eastern Conference Finals to make their only ever appearance in the NBA Finals, where they lost to the Lakers in six games. But we get the resurgence. Now, last year, the Pacers beat them in the semifinals in seven games, won seven games.
They both claim they both had many injuries, so they're battling over who had the worst injuries in that.
Well, I haven't heard anybody make an excuse for Indiana. No. All I've heard from Knicks people is that they weren't at full strength. And
right.
Jalen Brunson got hurt in game three. But let me tell you something.
Dude, y'all had some injuries too.
But let me tell you something. And this is one. I don't care about that. I don't care about any of that. I do care about the fact that I think the Pacers' relentless style of play. It's not a coincidence that these teams that come in a little bit banged up by game three in these series, their guys are really banged up. The Pacers go 10 deep every night. The Knicks go 7 deep.
Right.
Pretty much. Right. With the occasional sprinkling of an eighth or a ninth. But their rotation is 7 guys. And the Cavs, the Bucks, they all went through it. By the middle of that series, they can't keep up with the way the Pacers play. It's 1,000 miles an hour. The Pacers are a very good defensive team. They're typically the more physical team. And I do think that attrition will be a factor in this series. Now, it may not happen tonight. It may not happen in game two. But eventually, the pace and the physical nature of Indiana wears you down.
Yes. I mean, I don't know who to take in this. Who do you like, Tuna? I mean,
like I said outside, man, I feel like the pace or the Knicks players and the fans feel like they've already won the championship after beating Boston.
Right.
I feel like with that mentality after getting over that and celebrating the way that they did and then trying to focus in and lock in for a team like Indiana, like Travis said, that just comes at you in waves. It's a bad combination, man. I don't think they're going to have time to breathe, and they might find themselves down 2-0 by the time that they're able to get their bearings. And like you said, by the time you get through those two games, attrition starts to set in the longer this series goes. So I'm with Travis. I'm going to take the Pacers in this one. And I'm with you guys. I'm team Pacers for the rest of this because I've got no other rooting interest, so I'd rather see you guys win something.
And – also, I mean, and this could come into play the first game, especially. Pacers have had 8 days off.
Mm-hmm.
Lot of time.
Knicks have been off 3 days.
Now, is there a fine line between too much time off and not enough time off?
Yeah. That was going to be my next thing, was that can go one of two ways, especially in the first game. Because the adrenaline's going to be a million, ratcheted up to a million. This crowd at MSG is going to be wild.
Wow.
I know it's massive in hockey. We've seen it last night. But
they're going to come out, and they are going to give Indiana their best shot. Like, Indiana has to weather that early storm in game one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something they've been able to do all through the playoffs. They've gotten down 15, 18, 19 points and been settled in.
Been down 20 in the fourth quarter.
One thing I love is that Carlisle has been there before. He's done it, and I think that is going to be the difference in this first game.
He never seems to get too overly excited about anything.
No,
he's always very even-keeled over there.
And he's a real
– he's an old Celtic.
Yeah.
And he's a real – not that all these guys aren't, but he's an old-school NBA guy.
I love him.
And he knows, like, don't get too high, don't get too low, play like we play. You know, things will take care of themselves. But you're right. And, like, after a bad loss, you never hear him go, like, even he might say, our effort wasn't particularly good tonight, but he'll never say anything like, you know, we were awful. And
we got our asses kicked.
And Halliburton didn't play worth
he's
a damn
total
tonight.
Old school.
Or anything like that. He'll just say, as a matter of fact, he goes the opposite way.
When
Halliburton
does.
Struggled in a game, he said, look, we're not worried about
that. He fights for his players, too. I love that.
He'll be back tomorrow night and play his best game, which he did. I'm super excited. And I can't say my unbiased opinion because I can't be unbiased when it comes to Pacers and Knicks. I'm pretty much can be unbiased about any other team that I root for versus anybody else, except maybe Indiana football against Ohio State.
I remember that one.
and the Indiana Pacers against the New York Knicks. I cannot be unbiased, but My prediction, and I'll stick with it, I'm going to take Indiana in six games.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I like that. Definitely.
I think Indiana in six is.
I don't think
legit.
It's going to go seven at all.
I don't either.
So.
I don't think the other series that we're getting ready to talk about is going to go seven either.
Yeah.
I don't. What'd you think about the game last night?
Well, I expected more. Like Minnesota, I thought their front court was kind of going to be able to like really slow Oklahoma City down,
right?
And I guess they did to an extent. I just don't think that Minnesota can score enough to keep up with them on a night in and night out basis. Now that may change. Like every game, when you get to this point, it's like a one night series.
Right.
Like everything changes each night. So I don't know. I want to see how Minnesota adjusts when they come out here.
Did you think the T-Wolves would get blown out like that last night?
I didn't. I really thought that they're, like I said, I thought their front court was going to be able to slow them down a little bit.
And they really did right up to the point that they, like, this sounds so stupid.
That they didn't.
And basic, but they really did. And then they didn't.
Yeah.
And that game turned from, you know, going back and forth possession by possession to like a 13-point game in about a minute and a half, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it happened so fast. And I know that happens in the NBA a lot with these, you know, the big spurts and everything. But I did think that the game got away from them like really, really quickly.
Right. Edwards has these games where he's real passive. When he's 18 points ain't enough. For him, like Randall, when Randall scores a lot of points, they're not doing well. Randall with one assist, come on, he's a triple double lefty. Mike Conley has not been playing good at all in any of the playoffs.
How old
opinion.
Is Mike Conley?
He's so old.
And when Naz Reid,
he had bad knees 20
when,
years
when,
ago.
When somebody like Naz Reid, who is a difference maker, has 4 points and 8 rebounds and plays 28 minutes. That ain't getting it done. I mean, you know, and McDaniels is still, he's doing his job. But, you know, you got Williams, Holmgren, and Gilgeous-Alexander having their way with everybody. I mean, none of the Caruso does a little ground. But look at this thing. Talking about deep like the Pacers. You're talking 10 players had over 11 minutes.
Yeah,
for the Thunder, and the T-Wolves just can't match that. I mean, Wallace is playing 33 minutes. Caruso, Wiggins. You know, I mean, dude, I just don't see how you can have that with Holmgren getting healthy again and feeling good, and Hartenstein playing well. It's just like Edwards can't do it all. They have got to get some guys to. I think they need to get Terrence Shannon Jr. in there more. He's a banger, a baller. You know, Dillingham and people like that aren't going to get it done. But just if you look at how Conley's playing, DiVincenzo 9 points and one rebound in 30 minutes. You know, I see the Thunder winning in 5 or 6. I just don't think that the T-Wolves, unless Edwards goes off for 50 in a game or something like that.
Which,
you know?
Which he absolutely could. He absolutely could.
I think we're going to see a completely different game plan on this next night, and I'm curious to see how that one goes.
Right.
The problem is with Oklahoma City, I feel like you just don't have room for error because they can just put a ton of points up in a matter of minutes.
Oh, so fast. And they play great defense.
Yeah, Caruso probably is a really good defender, man.
Yeah, he is. He really is really carrying them in certain ways. Did he not guard? Did Caruso, was he checking for a while? I thought he was actually guarding
Anthony Edwards.
Randall.
He was not, guarding several people. He was rotating.
He's all over everybody.
Well, they were super aggressive. And this, I think, will be the big adjustment that they'll make. I think they will take the ball out of Edwards' hands a lot more. Because every time he was pounding the dribble at the top of the key, no matter really where he was at, they were sending a double at him.
Mm-hmm. Right, and they were.
They're going to have to get him off the ball and get him shots working off the ball where the double team can't come
right
quick enough.
When he's driving and getting assists, and Naz Reid shooting a three, and even McDaniel, he's got to have more than three assists, and he's got to have more than 18 points. I mean,
yeah,
it was just a, you know, Randall disappears. He shows up big sometimes, and sometimes he's off.
He had a great first half.
Had like five threes, didn't he?
He didn't do anything in the second half. I don't know what his stats were, but
right.
I'd be shocked if he went for double digits in the second half.
I just think the Thunder have too many guns. It's just, you know, I said at the beginning that it was going to be Thunder and Celtics. I'm wrong about that. But I still think the Thunder's going to be in the finals.
I would. I can't argue with you. I do look for Anthony Edwards to have at least one, if not two games where he just takes the game over. Whether they win or not, I don't know. I'm going to say Oklahoma City wins it in six games.
Okay.
Is my prediction.
Yeah, I could see six. Maybe. I could even see this one going seven too. I'm not going to overreact to game one.
Right, I get it. Yeah,
you can't do
Minnesota.
You can't.
I mean, we've seen them,
right, and they play great. They're
really a good team. And I mean, that last series against Denver, Oklahoma City went seven games with that one.
Yeah,
and there was games that they put out what 150, 147 or something one night, and you're like, oh, this is over with, and then Denver would battle back by making it a little bit more physical.
Right.
I look for Minnesota to do the same thing. I'm not going to overreact to that one.
There's, as you know, and especially the later you get in the playoffs, there may be no bigger adjustments in sports than between game one and game two of a big-time playoff matchup.
Right.
So
don't forget about SGA's fouling tactics either.
Yeah, yeah.
getting in their heads a little bit.
I do think – now, it will not – I will go on record and say I will not be shocked if Minnesota wins. It won't shock me.
No, it won't shock me.
I will be moderately surprised, but I would not be shocked. And I would love for that series to go seven games because, number one, I love game sevens, especially in the conference finals. And secondarily, if the Pacers win, maybe I'd give them an extra day or two off.
I know we're getting on some college baseball, getting ready to start up, or whatever you are getting. I know you got some SEC stuff done. What did you all think about the draft, the lottery? Did you all watch the lottery?
Oh, no.
Did you see? I mean, everybody thinks the lottery's rigged.
That's what I heard about.
My Chicago Bulls went from getting Cooper Flagg to being the 12th pick. Somehow, all these trades and everything that go through every year, you're like, wait a minute, the Bulls moved up the ladder, and bam, and then all of a sudden, because they didn't win the lottery, they moved back to 12th.
What about
Dallas getting Cooper Flagg? I mean, could it have went better for anyone?
No.
I'd draft Ace Bailey.
But you know what I'm saying?
Rutgers is on a hot streak in athletics.
And you
right
know
now.
People are all over Dallas because they feel like they made the dumb call and there may have been some confusion on them getting rid of Luka and this and the other. But they just turn around and get one of the better players that's going to be in the lottery the next 8-10 years. I thought him and Anthony Davis playing side by side.
And look, I don't
for 30 games a season.
I was just about to say.
And I don't forget, year before, Anthony Davis played a full season and did not get hurt. And played really well. I mean, you know, 30-17.
Here's what I will say about the NBA draft is that it's fun to talk about the frozen envelope with Ewing and all that stuff. I love all that. I don't believe in any of it, but I love it all. And when I found out that Dallas got the number one pick, my initial thought was, this is the best thing to happen in the NBA draft since the frozen envelope thing.
Yeah.
Because everybody's immediate reaction was rigged.
Rigged.
And I think, obviously the NBA doesn't want that to be like a real story, but I guarantee you they were not upset that 20 million people got on Twitter that night. We're talking about the NBA draft.
Oh, no, they weren't. And Philly, shame on you, you bums. Even though I won money on you losing by 30 and 40 every single game, you all tanked, noticeably tanked, horribly. So did Phoenix to a certain extent, and it didn't help you at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, when we get off the NBA, Jimmy Butler, you are not a superstar. You are just a role player that plays decent in the playoffs. You are not a superstar, and you never will be.
Well, yeah, he carried the Heat pretty far a couple years ago.
Maybe, whatever. Yeah. I mean, who remembers that, you know?
Well, Tuna did.
I just did.
Yeah. I mean, well, come on. He ain't, dude, you know.
Yeah, I don't.
If you can't score over 14 when your best player's hurt in the playoffs, then you ain't got no game. And you can't do it once. You can't do it twice.
How old is Jimmy Butler?
I'd say he's probably, I'm going to guess.
33.
32.
I'll tell you here in just a
second. Over under 32. I'm going to take the over.
Okay.
All right.
You're taking the over?
Yeah.
How old did you say, Fred?
I said 32.
He set the line.
Okay. He is 35 years old.
Oh! That old some bitch.
Tuna's a winner.
He is 35 years old.
Yeah.
Well, go get your junkyard started, Jimmy, because you're done.
Is that what NBA players do when they retire?
Can't get six rebounds.
Open junkyards?
Can't get a rebound in
two quarters.
I think
that's his nickname.
Oh, okay.
Junkyard Jimmy.
Well, there you go.
Junkyard Jimmy. Anyways, what about, are we talking about hockey or?
I, real quick.
Whatever you guys
want
to go, man.
Because Tuna, I have been, obviously, last week we didn't have a show. I was on vacation and.
How was that? Did you get a little tan? Did you put some two on?
I did not. I tried my best to
put
straight
butter
out
on
the
sun. not be burnt or anything like that. Got to play golf a couple times. It was great.
There you go. I saw that you went to the greatest place in the southern hemisphere or the south.
The Floribama
Yacht Club.
Mm. I sure did. That was great.
Raw oysters.
Had some
on the
oysters
half
there and things. So I have been out of the loop because every day I was there, if I wasn't doing something at the beach or playing golf or whatever, I was watching 500 practice and really wasn't on my phone a lot. So, Tuna, you had on our group thread today had said, we got to talk about college football playoff changes. And I had literally no idea what you were talking about.
Yeah, let's get into this.
So I jumped on my phone and just briefly saw like what the headlines were, did not have a chance to get deep into it. I understand it has something to do with the way they're going to seed. And
I heard
somewhere.
Bama gets a bye into the playoff. No, keep going.
But,
well, probably.
But I wanted you to explain what is going on not just to our listeners, but to me, and fill us in on what changes they're looking at making.
So, Fred, you're unaware of this?
I am unaware of this, and I've been kind of keeping up with my Bama
website,
I haven't been keeping up with my SEC website.
That's the thing. I guess this past week, the meeting of the minds, all the conference commissioners got together and had a big meeting about playoff expansion, and now these votes had to be unanimous. And for changes to be made. And I think they all agreed to a 16 team format and they're going to change the ranking system, like the seeding system where they're just going to rank them 1 through 16, one seed plays the 16 seed, so on straight off of the, there's no conference championship bye weeks like before, you know, I don't think there's any bye weeks in this one. There's going to be 16 teams. How do they do bye weeks? Right. So it's going to be straight on down the line.
Right.
Now, the one thing that I have issue with that I'm a little upset that the Big 12 and the ACC agreed to, I think they were getting bullied and pushed around a little bit. by Tony P. Titty and Greg Sankey.
Okay.
So what it is the SEC will have four guaranteed spots in this 16-team playoff.
Four?
Four guaranteed spots. The Big Ten will have four guaranteed spots in this. So that consumes half of the field immediately. Now, that's guaranteed spots. Now, they can get more in. Okay? So, just throwing that out there.
So, Bama did get a bye. No, I'm kidding.
Basically. Now, my concern with this is, now, college football is cyclical. The Big Ten, we have seen a lot of down years from them. You know what I mean?
Sure.
We have seen SEC basically have two to three teams carry them and then a drop-off after that. We have seen the ACC actually be a pretty good conference when Florida State's hitting, when Miami's hitting, when Clemson's hitting. Okay. Now the ACC was given two guaranteed spots and the Big 12 was given two guaranteed spots. Now again, you can get more in if you're ranked that high.
Right.
But I don't like it's not like the Big 10 and the SEC have this many more schools than the other teams, you know what I mean?
Oh,
or
right.
Than the other
yeah,
conferences.
Yeah, sure.
But they're guaranteed more spots, and I think that that creates a separation.
And that's based on history.
And I don't like the guaranteed. Like, if you're looking at the 16 and the top 16 teams get in, what's it matter if those spots are guaranteed or not? You know what I mean? It should be.
Oh, right.
Chances are there's going to be five SEC teams ranked that highly anyway.
Right.
And if they're not, then they don't deserve to be.
Exactly.
What you're doing here is saying, okay, and this
you're
is what this
out
can.
Boise.
Well, this can. Now they're still at large teams.
Right.
Okay?
I get it.
The number one, the top ranked, the highest ranked group of five school or group of four, however many's in there
right,
now,
right.
Is an automatic bid still. Okay. So even if they're ranked 22nd or 38th, they're still getting in the playoffs.
Have they done away with the buys in the
We haven't seen a bracket.
We haven't seen that yet.
We haven't seen the bracket yet. My understanding is it's just going
to
be a 16 seed. Like I said, the one seed plays the 16.
I like that.
And that's what it's going to be.
But that's how it should have been. Don't you agree?
You're not going to get an Arizona State bye. You're not going to get, like, a Clemson bye week because they won the ACC.
That's what we wanted.
Yeah, we wanted that. Now, I don't like the guaranteed spots.
I
think that's a problem. The Big Ten has a really down year, so they only got three teams that are worth the crap.
Yeah, and
you know what I mean?
That's going to create all kinds of issues if you're like, well, this team's guaranteed. Well, they're not that good. Like, Ole Miss is guaranteed. Well, they're not that good.
Well, let's just do the math real quick. If you say, okay, say the Big Ten has three teams ranked in the top 15. I'm going to say 15 because you're going to have that top group of
Ohio
five.
Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State. Oh, wait, Indiana.
And okay, quickly, I'm reading the overview of what has just come out.
Okay.
The top four teams will, in fact, receive byes.
Okay.
But the top four teams are not automatically the conference champions anymore. They are whoever
the four
is
highest
ranked, one through
okay,
four.
So you could have four SEC teams get byes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you could.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Or four Big Ten teams.
Right.
Okay.
So, I mean, like last year, or the 2 years ago, where Clemson and Ohio State were both ranked up there, like one and two or whatever, like both of those could get byes. If it comes into
I still
that.
Think right. A lot of it is where you play. If you play at home, odds are you're going to win.
Now,
and I don't know how they can switch
now,
that around.
Winning a conference championship automatically puts you in still. Okay, you still get in.
Right, but
you don't get a bye week.
But you're just not guaranteed to be one of the top four seeds.
But I thought
right.
it was really going to be cool at the beginning when they went to the venues of everything.
I think they're still going to do that.
Until we get a team that wins at that venue that is a high seed for that big March Madness style football upset, it's going to be – I think most of those teams are just going to win at home. And I don't want to do away with that, but I want to somehow switch that around maybe where it's a neutral site.
I don't know, man. That's part of college football. I like it. Every game's a playoff. throughout the season, and they have to go to these home road environments. So,
and my thought on that, and trust me, I'm coming from someone who the only thing that bummed me out about the IU football season last year,
and you can't get to play at home.
Well, I know I don't that we didn't get to go like to the Sugar Bowl the Rose Bowl,
yeah,
or the Orange Bowl, where we would have like we just went and played at Notre Dame, and I wasn't gonna go watch IU play at Notre Dame, and like we didn't get the bowl like that scenario or whatever.
And that's what I'm getting at, though.
But unfortunately, the bowl games aren't the atmospheres that they used to be because of opt-outs. The only ones that really matter, where they're actually selling out and becoming these raucous environments, are the ones that are associated with the playoffs.
Right, and that's what I was saying. Like, it would have been cool if, I mean, I get why they reward the higher seeds and all that stuff, and it's probably be a logistical nightmare, but it would have been cool if that IU Notre Dame game, even if it was in, if it was like the, what's a medium, like the like
Gator Bowl,
yeah, like if it was at the Gator Bowl,
uh-huh,
like that would have been awesome, you know.
I love the home environments. I really do. Call me crazy. I think if they earned a higher seed, like
I'm speaking strictly as a selfish Indiana fan that wanted to celebrate the season with other fans and like have the stadium split. But I totally get why they do it, and I think it's probably the right thing to do for the first round of the playoffs.
Right, right.
Yeah, I just think the buzz of hosting a game on campus is pretty damn awesome.
But it will be cool when someone does pull that upset.
But all this speaking, my biggest gripe is the guaranteed spots. Because
I agree with you.
You could end up having, you know, teams from the ACC that could be ranked higher, or the Big 12 that could be ranked higher than these guaranteed SEC spots that get left out because you're guaranteed, and here comes Mississippi State jumping in there for their crazy year or something like that. I don't know. I don't – like, you're committing to it. Now, granted, over the past 5, 6 years, 7, 8, it's worked out that way, but we don't know what the future holds for 2, 3, 4 years from now. And you're kind of –
I agree with you 100%.
So anyway, and then there's other more things, changes going on in the world of college football. For one, I don't know if you all have seen USC and Notre Dame are looking at ending their rivalry because the Big Ten went to 9 conference games. So USC, and they've played for over 100 years. They've only missed during World War II. And if you don't know the history behind the Notre Dame USC game, then just turn off this podcast now.
Right.
Because that is, you know, there are two teams that I just really don't think much about, but when they play each other, I watch the hell out of that game because it's one of the best there is.
I mean, there's a chance you might see Notre Dame come out in their green uniforms or whatever for that game.
And no matter how bad one or the other is, that one's always a knuckle, you know, a blood match.
Yeah.
But it's a great game.
Boy, and, you know, and I don't know all the political stuff, the ins and outs and everything, but, man, it just seems like if – and this is from USC specifically, they've already joined the Big Ten. That's already weird.
Yeah.
And then if they quit playing Notre Dame, it almost takes another thing away from them that makes them special. You know what I mean?
That's the thing. The whole thing about college football, in my opinion, and why I love the game of college football so much, is the tradition. The tradition makes college football. Every tradition across the board makes the game of college football. And it's getting – all the traditions are getting ripped further and further apart by these super conferences.
Right.
I mean, we've lost Bedlam. We've lost the Backyard Brawl. We've lost the Texas-Texas Tech game before Texas moved to the SEC – or Texas-Texas A&M before they moved there. I mean, it's just rivalries getting split everywhere.
Oregon State, Oregon.
And something's going to have to be fixed about this. And legislation, I don't know if they're going to get involved or not. But Nick Saban was appointed –
I
to some
that.
Seat
yeah,
up there.
Yeah, he's like going
to
be like the czar or
the czar of college football, I guess. So, which he already was like for the past 20 years anyway. So
true.
Nothing's really going to change here.
But I think he will make smart decisions.
Again, like I mentioned last time we kind of touched on this, I think his mindset is based on what college football used to be. And he retired from the game because it's changed so much.
Yeah.
So now he's going to have to look at these changes and be like, these changes aren't going anywhere.
But
how can we adapt from something that caused me to leave the game.
But don't forget that he is adapted with everything.
I'm with you. Except for this, because
except
he quit.
For this.
But anyway, hopefully he's a smart guy. Like
he'll have smart people,
and he's
going to
have
him.
A team around him that's probably hopefully takes over. But so legislation also has put in this house settlement. I guess we don't really know the full guidelines, but every power conference is forcing their schools to sign this. What is it? $22 million. That they pay out to their athletic department.
Right. Yeah, it's something
across,
like that.
And then it's up to the school to figure out how they're going to pay out. Well, the state of Tennessee is pushing back and saying that this is unconstitutional. This is whatever. It's a bunch of legal terms that I don't understand because I'm dumb. But it's Tennessee's not going to sign it. And saying, hey, if we want to spend $30 million, we want to spend $50 million, we should be able to do it.
Then we're going
to
do it. Sure.
And what they could be facing, and this is a real thing, the SEC could evict them. They're saying sign the paper or get evicted, which I think would be hilarious.
Very hilarious.
All the power conferences are following suit. The ACC's forcing all their people to do it. SEC is, Big 12, Big 10. So, and everybody's following suit, but the state of Tennessee is pushing back. So it's curious to see where this is going to go. I think it'd be awesome if Tennessee ended up in Conference USA and was playing up in Bowling Green and, App State.
You mentioned outside that maybe the entire state of Tennessee shouldn't be against this because Vanderbilt just assigned anything they put in front of them. Like, just keep us in there, man.
Yeah. They'll be like, Vanderbilt will be like, we'll take half of the TV revenue if you do this.
And I say that as somebody that clearly is a huge fan of Commodore Athletics, but I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, they're catching a free ride right now, making a lot of money. And but anyway, there's a lot of changes going on. It's curious to see how that's going to play out. And then while we're on the topic, one more thing. ACC has completely agreed to change their revenue share to end the lawsuits with Florida State, Clemson going forward. And it's basically they're going to pay out based on the revenue that you're bringing in. So your television ratings. Say Clemson, the more big games that people tune in to watch, they're going to make a bigger share of the money. If people aren't watching your games, you're not going to make as much.
I gotcha.
So it's up to the schools to be kind of smart here. And here's the thing. We've seen it. You sent a text about it this week. Jeff Brohm from Louisville has tried to schedule as many teams as possible to get these big premier games that people are going to tune into.
Right.
The problem is nobody wants to schedule
this. Some don't want
to
do it. They
and we're running into seclusion by the SEC and the Big Ten. And it's actually kind of a problem going forward.
It is.
But the big thing is you got to get creative. Like Louisville has a few Friday night games this year where you're like, the standalone games are what's going to bring the money in.
The only
if
show
we
got
to go back
right?
to start playing on Wednesday night like we did 20 years ago, I'll do it. We just got to make the money. The funny thing is if you go back to the 2023 season or the 2024 season, because the 2025 is not out until baseball season is over with. But Louisville actually led the SEC or the ACC in revenue. But here's the thing. They brought in $46.5 million.
Okay.
Last place was Wake Forest at $43.5 million.
Okay.
So only $3 million right. separated. But those were the Kenny Payne years.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's a good point.
I wasn't even watching half of those games.
Right.
You know what I mean? I feel like
– isn't Louisville traditionally – one of the most profitable basketball programs.
Yeah.
You're listening to the pressers.
So I feel like this thing that was, put into motion to benefit, Florida States and Clemsons of the world, Miamis of the world, is going to, in fact, benefit us also and kind of maybe keep us at the top of the ACC. But anyway, there's a lot of shakeups.
And keep the ACC.
Yeah, it may keep the ACC together. And you know what? Like, you've got some talented teams. Like, some traditional teams. Like, if Virginia Tech can get it rolling again like they did in the early 2000s. Georgia Tech's on the climb up. You've got Miami, who is paying as much as anybody to get talent.
Yeah.
Florida State, maybe.
No. Who was in the playoff?
SMU is definitely there. They're going to be a big-time player.
Yeah, sure.
And yeah, so that's the thing. That's why I didn't like the two guaranteed spots, because I think the future actually, and this is something I never would have been able to say previously, is the future actually almost looks somewhat bright for the ACC.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that for basketball, but football is what drives the ship here.
Absolutely.
But all that going said, I mean, we're less than 94 days till college football season.
Yep.
So there's a lot to keep up with, man. We're almost there. It's three more months. So it's all
who
downhill.
Knows? Maybe we'll be doing a live show on a live YouTube show.
I certainly hope that we are on YouTube by the beginning.
I gotta
of
show
the,
my bling at some point.
Yes, by the
I think we're
of...
gonna be on. I've kind of. We can talk about this off air a little bit, but yeah, that's kind of our goal, is to be on YouTube. Whether we're separated or together or somewhere, you'll be able to watch us. I don't know if our heads will be looking somewhere weird, but hopefully
be
you'll be able to look at us.
And we certainly will look forward to that. I know we went pretty long on the 500, and then we had the
That's all right. We didn't do a show last week.
I know, yeah. But then we had the Ursae news break.
Can I say? We're doing a round.
Yeah. We're gonna get to all that. I wanted to have a little bit of time here at the end of the show, as we haven't talked about the Preakness or anything like that. I know Fred can touch on that briefly. I will just say this: journalism is the best 3-year-old horse. Just like I said before, Kentucky Derby. I thought he proved it in the Preakness. I wish like hell he would have won the Derby, because then we'd be talking about that stretch run at the Preakness as one of the all-time great moments in modern horse racing history.
Yep.
But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I want to, like I said, we have a little bit of time here at the end of the show. So I'm going to send it. I'm going to call last call here, and I'm going to start with Fred, because I know he probably has a few different things to get to, and then we'll go to Tuna, and then I'll finish it out.
Well, as Travis was talking about, the $1.2 million winner Saturday was journalism at crazy bad odds.
Say the line.
What's that?
Say the line. What'd you text earlier about the Preakness?
I thought it was weak.
I don't know. I thought it was pretty good.
I knew journalism was going to win that race. His odds were terrible. Whoever Gosker is, good luck to you, Gosker. But he screwed everything up for me. And by the way, if Sandman is in the Belmont, that's your Belmont winner. I'm going to tell you that right now.
No.
Rodriguez may be in there. A couple others. Sovereignty could do well.
Is Beza
Journalism
running
could do well. Beza could do well. But I'm telling you that I think that Sandman is still an improving horse. He ran sixth in the Derby. Everyone thought he was kind of a dog. He ran a great race in there. If you look at it again, with some trouble.
Jesus. Journalism got Malachi crunched like three times.
He did.
And he wouldn't.
He is a great horse.
If he gets a clean trip,
I just don't think. I don't know if he can last that long of a race.
I think he'll win by more.
Okay.
But we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that.
I want to if Scott Scheffler isn't on the dollar bill yet, he's going to be soon.
Yeah.
What a great blowout win.
And I saw almost none of that tournament.
Well, it was unbelievable. Rom had some horrible
he just collapsed
bad
at
luck,
the end.
But he had bad luck too. He got some really bad breaks, and then he lost. But you got to say that there's only three live tours worth of shit, period. And Patrick Reed has been playing good this year, but he was a no show last week. But Chef Rom and Shambo,
hold on, Joaquin Neiman.
Okay,
he ain't
won nothing yet. But the other guys, those three are really carrying Liv in the majors.
Shambo,
Rom and Shambo. Rahman Chamel, not Scheffler. He's not on. What's the third one?
Koepka, maybe?
Koepka's been awful.
But I just mean from a name standpoint.
I think Joaquin Niemann, he's probably won the most on the LIV Tour, and he's had probably more top 20 finishes than anybody from the LIV Tour.
And God, man, Phil looks old. Dustin Johnson looks like Archie Bunker.
He doesn't care.
But anyways, Brooks, congrats to Scheffler. He's just the best. I am college baseball. We'll get further down into there. Told y'all earlier, I like Oregon and Bama in that, and UC Irvine. Also want to congratulations to SGA. He is your NBA MVP.
Yep.
I think everybody knew that was happening. Pumped up about flag football in the Olympics. I'm pumped up about it. My son plays now. I have a blast at these games going on, and I just want to see Lamar play in the Olympics and be healthy.
I am not enthusiastic about this.
I'm kidding. Trust me, this is going to be, I really think that some of the, I know NFL players can play, but you're not going to have the best of the best out there. I just don't think so.
I don't know, man. Going for gold medals, a pretty cool thing.
It's
going
to be nuts. Put it this way.
If I'm an owner, I'm trying to figure out contracts to keep this from happening.
I know. But good Lord. I mean, it's going to be pretty
Let's say
cool.
Lamar. I don't even want to speak it into existence.
No.
Yeah, I'm not.
Let's not say anything.
I'm just
going to
ignore that.
Yeah. Burrow definitely ain't going to play. But Mahomes, because
he's not
good
enough.
Mahomes might want that medal, dog. Anyways, that's it for Fred.
All right, Tuna, last call.
We didn't touch on it, so I'm on a hockey. We got NHL playoffs going on too, boys.
Absolutely,
and we are down to one Canadian team left.
Yeah.
Yes. It's Edmonton and. I think they are playing right now a matchup with the best team in hockey, the Dallas Stars.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Dallas Stars are on, like, Mikko Rantanen, what he has been doing. We're talking 9 goals and 10 assists in the playoffs this year, which is insane. And Jake Oettinger, their goalie, has just been Mr. Consistency. And I think the matchup in this is, you got McDavid out there. You know, Edmonton has their talent, but was it Skinner? Their Stuart Skinner, the goalie for them, he got benched twice in this playoff series. So or like last series. Ooh. Oh, they almost got it there.
Yes,
but
they did.
Anyway, I like Dallas to win the Stanley Cup. If I was you guys, I'd go and throw money
Travis,
on it.
Travis, who do you have?
I have nobody.
I have
so,
the Florida Panthers.
Okay,
and
we're
going to
talk
Cup.
About that series.
I'm going to jump on the Dallas bandwagon because I feel like if Dallas would have had this hockey team in 1982, J.R. Ewing would have been one of the co-owners.
They were the Minnesota North
Stars. I don't
think
Dallas scores enough scores enough goals to win the Stanley Cup. I know that Tuna looks like Mike Modano, but that does not matter. I think the Florida Panthers are going to beat the Hurricanes.
We're going to touch on that series here in a minute, but I want to talk about Mikko Rantanen, who is on a total revenge tour. Let's talk about the trip this guy's been on.
Goal, Edmonton.
Okay. Right after I give props to Jake Oettinger. But anyway, he's out in Colorado. They realize they're not going to be able to pay him. They trade him to Carolina. Carolina's like, well, we're not going to pay him either. Trade him to Dallas. So Dallas knocks Colorado out of the playoffs.
Right.
And then they have a shot at getting Carolina in the playoffs and knock them out. So it's kind of a revenge tour.
It is.
Too bad he didn't play for Edmonton. And we'd have another one here. But I think they're going to get through Edmonton without a problem because Edmonton's always screwing up. And the Carolina Hurricanes and the Florida Panthers,
Hurricanes are tough.
This is a bit of a matchup because, again, we talked about this with the Caps, the physicality that they bring compared to the size. The difference is Bobrovsky, the goalie for the Panthers, he has been not good throughout the playoffs.
True.
He started seeing the puck in that last series against Toronto. And when he's seeing the puck like he did last year – it's almost impossible to beat them because they're going to go out and put up three goals at least
for sure
every night.
Bet the
minimum.
Over in the Hurricanes Panthers games, yeah. And bet the under in the Stars Edmonton.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
that's the way to do it. If you can get those 5.5
I got
lines
that bet tonight,
if it stays at the 5.5 lines, every now and then they'll trick it up to like
one
six
was
and
six.
A half.
One
yeah,
was six. Tonight.
Yeah, so you got to watch that, and it's worth bringing it down. But that's it is a weird matchup, and we'll touch more on that as the series goes because I know we're kind of up against it.
Good stuff. I didn't know you were pulling for Dallas.
I usually don't because they kind of have a bit of a rivalry with the Preds.
Yeah.
But I'm not really pulling. I'm just saying they're the team that I think is going to win.
A great game
yeah.
And some fights and yeah.
And Dallas really doesn't win. I know the Texas Rangers won a World Series a couple years back, but and Johnny's a Stars fan. Our
yes,
boy Johnny.
Yes,
that's
he
right.
is.
So we'd like to win it for Johnny.
Yep. There you go, so, Johnny. Right.
And that's what I got.
All right. Well, I think this was an interesting show tonight for sure. We had the unfortunate news about Jim Irsay. We had a very kind of an in-depth Indianapolis 500 breakdown. Talked a lot of NBA, but I had from a personal standpoint, I had my first. I'm going to call it the Bill O'Reilly meltdown.
Oh,
have you ever seen the clip of? You know who Bill O'Reilly is? He used to have
the guy that was on Fox News.
Yeah, didn't he?
Yeah.
So the
political figure.
So there's a very famous. He used to be on a show called Inside Edition.
Inside Edition.
And there's
yes.
a very famous clip of him where he's trying to do a read, and he's getting frustrated.
I've seen it.
And he goes, "Screw it! Screw it! We'll do it live! We'll do it live! Screw it!" And he has a meltdown. Now. For listeners of this show, I had a bit of a meltdown earlier in this episode where I was in the middle of my, you know, very important Indianapolis 500
damn right
speech here, and there was some shenanigans going on in the other part of the downstairs pub.
I tried like hell to keep it together. I just couldn't do it.
And I heard some laughing and stuff, and I may have let an expletive go or whatever. And I was basically Bill O'Reilly did. I was like, screw it.
I thought you was just praising Stingray Rob's car.
That's right. Yeah. That's
I didn't know.
It was something like that. So, astute listeners might be able to tell where the edit is in that, but that was pretty funny in retrospect. I really enjoyed doing the show tonight. Missed it last week when we didn't have a show.
Seemed like forever.
I would, if you don't have anything else going on Sunday, even if you're not a big fan of auto racing in general, I would advise turning on the races on Fox this year, turn on the pre-race stuff, get a feel for the pageantry and the whole experience of Indianapolis. It is my single favorite day of the entire year in sports, and very much looking forward to taking Fred.
I'm coming back. Can I say one thing I want to add?
Sure.
Can you? I'm telling you, guys. Last year, because Travis got me pumped up when they were going again. We were talking about it on the podcast because we've only done this for what, almost 2 years now. I was in Florida on vacation, and I literally put the Indy 500 on the radio on my headphones, sitting on the beach drinking beer, drinking High Noons. And I had so much fun listening to that race, all the chaos and craziness on the radio.
Honestly,
I almost think that's the best way to listen to it.
The best, and I'm obviously biased, but the best radio broadcast team in all of sports is the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. And and it has been since the days of Sid Collins. Whether it be Sid Collins, Paul Page, Bob Jenkins, Mike King, Mark Janes, and everybody that works on the network is fantastic. If you are out and about and you can find it on your radio or If you have SiriusXM radio, there's an IndyCar channel. You can stream it. They do bring the race to life on the radio, and I am obviously an enormous fan of theirs. Want to thank everybody for listening. If you enjoy the show, please tell a friend. If you have friends that might be interested in the Indianapolis 500, maybe let them know about this broadcast tonight. And we will certainly be back here next week to break down all things NBA. We'll get back into hockey, but we will certainly recap the 109th running of the Indianapolis 500 mile race. For the big fella, the Tuna Country Matt Kemp, and the fabulous one, Freddie Benders, this is Travis Carter saying so long, everybody.